Welcome to Simcha, even though, for Parshas Balak. And here we go. So isn't it interesting that King Paro's biggest reason to enslave Klal Yisrael was simply because there were so many of them and they were such a strong presence in Mitzrayim? Well, history certainly repeats itself because King Balak has the same exact complaint. He sends messengers to Bilam saying, Hine, behold, Am Yatza me Mitzrayim. The nation has left Mitzrayim. Hine chisa es ein ha'aretz. Behold, they've covered ein ha'aretz, meaning there's so many of them. V'hu yoshev mimoli, and they're very close to me, meaning they're ready to destroy me. V'ata, he says to Balaam, and you, l'chana, please go. Orali, curse for me, es ha'amaze, this nation, ki otum hu mimeni, because they're stronger than me. Now, this sounds like plain old ugly jealousy to me. What's criminal about being many or strong? Unless you feel threatened. So what does Rashi say? Rashi says that Sichon and Og used to protect Moav, but now that Klal Yisrael killed out Sichon and Og and conquered them, now Moav is scared. Balak is the king of Moav. The Arachayim says that unbeknownst to Moav, Klal Yisrael was actually told they're not allowed to kill Moav. Rus was later to come out of Moav. They weren't allowed to kill Moav, but they had a very good war tactic, and they made it appear as though they were going to attack Moav just for their own protection, but actually they weren't even allowed to. And Sefer Chachamim says, and this sounds very familiar of today, that they said, that Balak said, they're going to take away our jobs and our money. And if we do anything to them, they'll kill us. So, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And the Arachayim also says something very interesting. It says, when Balak sends a message to Bilam, behold, the nation has left Mitzrayim. It's like, hello, the whole world heard about Yetzias Mitzrayim. This is not news. What is he telling Bilam? Everybody knew that the Yidden left Mitzrayim. And he was hinting that way in the beginning, Bilam had, with magic, been able to prevent any Eved from leaving Mitzrayim. It was his magic that made it impossible for them to leave. So Balak's telling Bilam, well, you know, they left, so your magic is like wearing off over here. But this is my question. Paro, Balak, you guys are kings for heaven's sakes. What are you worried about? Make the Jews your friends. Make them your allies. Harness the power of these awesome people to make your kingdom great. Doesn't every king yearn for as many friendly neighbors as possible? You would have it. Only pathetic jealousy distorts a person's view so that you have a Balak who wants to curse the Jews so that he can attack them successfully and banish them from the world forever. He's even willing to pay Bilam a great sum of money to get the job done. As we clearly see, getting hung up on another person's success can drive a jealous person out of their right mind if they don't get a handle on their runaway feelings at the very beginning. There are hundreds of cases where people in positions of tremendous power who already have everything they could possibly desire and enjoy in one lifetime, yet they obsess over that one person who has more than they do. To use a secular example first, think Snow White. What did that queen say? Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all? Right? I think if I remember correctly, it bothered her that there was one person that was prettier than her. Think Haman. Haman went meshuggah every time one person refused to bow down to him. Think Germany. Think Hamas. All these people let a tiny seed of jealousy grow so huge that they themselves became monsters in the process. So what does this have to do with us? So I'm going to bring it down. Okay, we're not monsters, but this is how it could fit to, you know, us being on him. So imagine this common scenario. Let's say a short woman bought a ticket to a play, and she finds herself sitting right behind a tall lady with a gigantic hat. Should she sit there stewing about how the lady's blocking her view of the stage? Or why not just find another seat? And if all the other seats are taken or she's too squished into her place, maybe she could tap the woman on the shoulder and politely ask her to remove her hat. Or offer to switch seats with the person next to her, who's also tall. Or you can fold up your coat into a mini booster seat so now you can see over the big hat, right? There are lots of solutions here. And it's all going to depend on whether this person uses her mind to resolve the issue or instead build up such a hatred for the poor lady with the hat that she misses the whole play just plotting her revenge, right? Very often, it seems like someone else is blocking the light that should be coming our way. But the solution is not to sit there seething in fury It's to figure out a way around it. We've all been there. Remember when you're a little girl and there was a relative going on and on about your sibling and you felt very bad? Remember you were in school and a teacher kept calling on the smartest kid in the class and you felt inadequate and inept? Fast forward a few years, graduated, came back from seminary, and a friend gets the job that you thought would be offered to you. Fast forward a few more years, your neighbor's husband is really hands-on with the kids, and your husband is not always home. The list is endless. So now we all have hearts, which is where the hurt or the frustration starts. But what about our minds? What are we using it for? Are we creatively plotting to take down another person, chas v'shalom? Or are we picking ourselves up and building our own structure, paving our own way? It's true that a little child might not have the tools, but we're not little children anymore. We have options and we have the ability to solutionize. We can tell ourselves that we have the strength to deal with this pain-causing scenario. We have to be creative and move forward. And this will bring us to Simcha. And it's here that I'd like to introduce you to a few such heroes. In the first story, the person uses his creativity the wrong way at first, but when Hashem ever so gently steers him on the right path, he gets it straight. So here's the first story. I'm going to say it in first person the way I read it. He says that his father always used to tell him that the preparations for a chasan and a kala are very different. A kala has to go to the sheitel macher and to the seamstress and to here and to there. A chasan goes to one store, buys a suit, shoes, tie, hat, that's it. So this bachur said, my father obviously belonged to a previous generation because today the chasan likes to be a little stylish also. There's a lot of ties to choose from, a lot of suits. Some people get custom suits. And he said about himself, I wasn't really like that type of person that always needed to be the fanciest, but I had decided a long time ago that for my wedding, I'm going to wear a luxury suit. And all my friends knew Shimon is going to be wearing a fancy suit to his wedding. So about 3 weeks before my wedding, I went to a very upscale neighborhood in Tel Aviv where they sell suits for fancy businessmen, that type. And I knew the prices were going to be expensive, but I had no idea how expensive. Walked around the store, saw a suit that seemed to be perfect for me, beautiful suit. And I knew, okay, this is the suit I'm wearing to my wedding. So I approached the seller and I said, that's the one I want. So the salesman said to me, very well, this is one of our cheap suits. It's only 6,000 shekel. What? Yep, you're right to be surprised because really, most of our suits are even more than that. And the guy's like, are you kidding me? 6,000 shekel is like a cheap suit. That's called cheap here. And the guy looked at me like I fell from the moon. He said, listen, you're not in the shuk. You're in the most expensive store in the country. The price of a suit here starts at 20,000 shekel. And I'm not even going to tell you how high it goes because I don't want to have to call Hatzalah to the store. So the guy looks at the other suits, and it was true. Some of the suits were even 80,000 shekel. So when he had first heard about the concept of custom-made suits, he had no idea that these were the prices. Even the 6,000 was too much for him, even the 6,000 shekels. So he said, you know what? I'm sorry, it's not for me. And he left the store. And for the next 2 weeks, he felt like a kind of sadness because he had like dreamed about having this customized suit for so long. And he said, I'm sure many of you readers might be thinking like, why am I so upset about a suit? But everyone has their own mishigasan, and this was mine. This was a dream of mine. Anyway, the week before the wedding, I bought a regular suit, a nice suit, but very standard, the same type of suit I wore as a bachur. And I'm ashamed to say that the story didn't end there. So he has his regular suit, and it's the day before his wedding, and he goes back to that store. And he told the salesperson, I'm not sure about this suit. My kala really wants to see how it looks on me. I'll give you a deposit check and I'll give it back to you in a day or two. So the man was like, okay, he didn't even insist on the check. And he just wrote down my contact information, packaged the suit, and he gave it to me. I left the store. I don't know what was going through my head because I was going to return it to the store after I wore it to the wedding. And I knew that sort of bordered on Geneva. But I remember that in my childhood, my friend had told me that people do that. They buy nice clothes, they take a fancy picture with it, portraits, and then they give it back. They make up an excuse. I'd heard of such a thing. Now, he says about himself, I'm a bacher who was always very careful to avoid stealing. But this was a nisayon that It's too hard to pass. The wedding day came. He did wear the luxury suit to the chuppah. Felt like a king. All his friends complimented him and told him, "Oh, Shimon, you're wearing the luxury suit just like you always said." And that was that. He did it. Now, after the chuppah, he told his kala that for dancing and everything, he could wear his regular suit. He told her that he had rented the suit. And for the dances, he didn't want to maybe she fits up or anything to happen to it. So he told her, "I'm just going to switch to my other suit now." And she didn't know anything. It was a very nice wedding, very happy. Everyone came, sang, danced, beautiful. And Baruch Hashem, the suit, nothing happened to it. And the day after the wedding, I sent my brother to the tailor to have the hem undone. That's not something you could really hide. And return the suit to the store. And I asked my brother, just explain to the salesman that my kala wasn't really interested in the suit, and I'm sorry. My brother gave me a very strange look, and I understood that he understood. But since we were very close, he didn't say anything, and that's it. During the first Shavuot Brachos, I asked him, "Oof, so what happened?" And he said, "Oh, everything went very well." Was he able to tell? Did he see anything? He says, "No, he didn't say anything. Enjoy your Shavuot Brachos." But I could tell that my brother wasn't so happy with me, what I had done, but he didn't say anything. The next day, my kala and I were opening all the envelopes, all the checks, and all the presents that people gave, and they were having a nice time with that. And they wrote down all the names and the amounts. And this is a very smart idea, actually. They made a copy of the list of who gave what to both parents, because sometimes the people giving the gifts are the parents' friends. It's actually a good idea. So when he gave the copy of the list of who gave what, his father looked like very puzzled. He said, "You didn't get anything from Meshulam, my friend Meshulam?" I said, "No." He said, "Did he buy you a present, maybe? Something, a present?" He said, "I don't think so, but I'll check." So the next night they went and they looked through the presents, but no, he hadn't bought a present either. And just so you know who this Meshulam is, he had once been very poor, and this Chassan's father had met him and helped him and built him up, and now he was doing very well. But the father felt like Hakaras HaTov, this Meshulam would give a nice gift. Anyway, it seemed like he hadn't given a check or bought anything. Now, Meshulam came to the last Shavuot Brachos, and he was looking at us very strangely, and my father didn't understand why. Finally, he said to my father, "Did you receive my gift?" Father said, "You brought a gift?" He said, "Of course. I gave the chassan an envelope with cash." And I was already getting very nervous, the chassan says. And Meshulam said, "I didn't understand what's going on. I put in a large sum and I found it actually odd that you didn't say anything." So the father said, "You know what? I'm glad you came to clear it up. Let's find out where it is. Do you think maybe someone stole it from the safe?" So somebody told me that sometimes at chassanas they have a safe. I never knew that. He said, "No, I gave the envelope to your son in prison before the chuppah. And he put the envelope in the pocket of the suit. I saw him do that." So I heard those words and I was like, "Oh no, we're in trouble here." I remembered now when I put the envelope in the suit, I remember thinking, why didn't he put the envelope in a safe? I figured he wants to give it to me personally. Put it in my suit pocket and I forgot about it. Anyway, the father didn't know the whole suit exchange thing. So he told me, "Check the suit tonight and everything will be fine." Okay, I said, but I knew it wasn't going to be fine. The suit had been returned to the store, and my father didn't know, and I couldn't bring myself to tell him either. Finally, Meshulam said, "Just be careful because there's 6,000 shekel cash in that envelope." Now, that happened to have been the same amount, if you remember, that the suit cost. So really, Hashem, this is not the end of the story, but just to pause here and connect it to what we're saying, he used his creativity to figure out a way to have the suit, but if he would have just not use his creativity for something negative, Hashem literally handed him the 6,000 shekel. Maybe he would have had to lay it out and get paid back, but okay. Anyways, story's not over. The next day he went to the store. You could imagine what he felt like. He was probably petrified. And I said to the salesman, "Do you remember me?" "Of course, I remember you. You were the one who was very shocked that this suit cost 6,000 shekel." Said, "I felt everything go blurry. Did anyone buy the suit?" I asked him. "Yeah, someone bought the suit, but another suit is coming to the store tomorrow. You know what? Maybe I'll even try to get you another suit this afternoon. Is that okay?" Oh no. So he's thinking to himself, basically, he lost 6,000 shekel. Who knows who has it? So he didn't have the suit, didn't have the money, didn't have anything. But he said to himself, I deserve this. Serves me right. And I said, nah, it's okay. And then he started to leave the store thinking, what is he going to do now? And the man called after him, hey, young man, come here. I turned around and the man was standing there holding a thick envelope. Obviously, he was trying to teach him a lesson. Said, you forgot something in the suit, you know? But don't worry, I already understood everything when your brother gave the suit back to me. Don't forget, he took it to the tailor to get the hem undone. He's a smart person, he could tell. He said, I must admit, though, you gave it back to me as good as new. He said, I can't even tell you how embarrassed I was at that moment. I didn't really know what to do with the 6,000 shekel, the salesman said. The suit is at my house, and I understand that you used it for a party, but even so, you don't deserve to lose 6,000 shekel for one evening. So the chassan's quiet. He's trying to figure out where is the salesman going with this. But by the way, what party did you need it for? A wedding, I said. Ah, from someone in your family? Yeah, me. Oh, Mazel Tov. I was getting more embarrassed by the second. Okay, listen, this whole thing, I understand what happened. I'm going to take 600 shekels from you as if you rented it, and I'm going to give you back the rest. So the chassan said, you know what? I'm going to pay for what I did. Keep the whole 6,000 shekel, and I'll take the suit. It will be a good lesson for me. And the salesman said, no, you know what? You're a young chassan. You made a mistake. You paid for it with all this embarrassment. Let's make a deal. I'm only going to take 600 shekel from you, as if you rented it, on one condition. I want you to spread this story without your name and give people the message that it's not kedai to do these things, and that will be our deal. He gave me the money, minus 600. And the first thing I did when I got back was to contact you and tell my story. The story was actually in French on Torah Box, which is a French Israeli website, and I translated it so that I could share it with you. Basically, what's his message? You don't win from dishonest behavior. We don't always understand the lesson right away. But that's the lesson he said. Right now, I'm building a bais emunah b'Yisrael, and I know that no matter what, always going to follow the path of Torah and the rules of halacha. And from my perspective, learning this lesson so well was the greatest gift I could have gotten at my wedding. Okay, so that's a long story. The other stories are very short, but that's a story of how someone. He had to be so creative and on top of the situation just so they could have that suit. But we're supposed to be telling to Hashem, go straight with Hashem. So the next story is much shorter, and it's about someone that did do things the right way. Basically, there was somebody who's lived in Morocco, and he wanted to move to Eretz Yisrael where his son already lived. And the son told him, Abba, or whatever he called him, you're not going to be able to get a job here because you can't read or write. So this man in Morocco asked Rav Meir Abuchatzira, I think it's the Baba Sali's son, I'm not sure, what he should do. And Rav Meir Abuchatzira said to him, Hashem feeds all, even the animals, all his creatures who can't read and write. He could help you also. So the man was still nervous about that. It's like a cute line, but like Lamaisa, like what would he do? So Rav Meir Abuchatzira saw that he needed more encouragement, and he told him, you're not only going to find a job even though you can't read and write, you're going to find a job because you can't read and write. So that was a strong bracha, and he made the trip. He landed in Eretz Yisrael. That day, he kissed the ground of Eretz Yisrael, and he went straight to the employment office. He had to wait a long time, and he saw a lot of people go ahead of him. They all looked very sophisticated, and with every new person that he saw going in, he's like, "Well, I don't even know if I have a chance, but I have a bracha that it's going to be okay." Finally, okay, it was his turn. They took his contact information. And he just wanted to get everything out of the way. As soon as he came in, he said, by the way, I can't read and write. He just told them right away. And they said, fine. They wrote it down. And he's like, not thinking anything's going to come from that. The very next morning, like early the next morning, which is basically his second day in Eretz Yisrael, they called him and they said, we want you to come down. We have a job for you. So it was from the defense ministry. So he's waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting forever, it seemed like. Finally, they called him in and they said, that we heard that you can't read or write. And we have a department, one of our weapons departments, that has very sensitive documents that have to be shredded. And we can't afford to have anyone read them or understand what it says. It's like it's classified information. But since you can't read and write, you're perfect for the job and you're hired. And they told him only later on, once he was already working for them, he said, remember, we made you wait a very long time in the waiting room? He said, we dafka put books and magazines there and we were watching you to see if you really couldn't read or write and you didn't touch any of the books or anything. So we knew, okay, this is the real deal. He really can't read and write. So exactly what the tzaddik said came true. He went with Emunas Chachamim. The tzaddik said that not only you won't not get a job because of it, you'll dafka, this will help you. And he only got this job because he couldn't read and write, because they needed someone that wouldn't understand the thing. So you see, when you just go with Hashem, go with Emunas Chachamim, it's simpler. I'm going to just share two more short stories of people just doing the right thing and Hashem helps them. One was that somebody took a cab, a taxi in Eretz Yisrael, and it happened to have been a red taxi. Usually they all have white cars, but it's red. And he left his hat in the cab. He was very upset because it was a new hat. We all know they're expensive, and he actually didn't have money to buy another one. And he's thinking, okay, he put up signs, but like very half-heartedly. He's like, how's he gonna find out? How are they gonna get the right taxi? Maybe it was a private taxi. Anyways, he knew that the chances of finding his hat were like finding a needle in a haystack and getting it back. And then he remembered a chazal that says that the bracha in your home comes from your wife. So he went to the bakery and he decided, I'm going to buy my wife her favorite pastry. Bracha comes from my wife. Let me make my wife happy. And then he saw the cashier. He said, are you a taxi driver? And do you drive a red car? It was like, that was how he looked. And the cashier smiled and he said, no, but my brother, who looks exactly like me, does drive a red cab. And of course, the Yid got his hat back because he just went with Hashem. It's Chazal say, bracha in your house comes from your wife. He went to buy his wife a Danish or whatever. The guy in the bakery was the brother and he got back his hat. And one last thing said that there was somebody who made a kiddush in shul because he had been hit by a car. And nothing happened to him. He, Baruch Hashem, he was okay. And he made a little kiddush in shul with cake and schnapps to thank Hashem that he had experienced the nes. The next day, someone else in shul said he's making a kiddush, brought cake and schnapps. And he said, also, it's like a sort of like a kiddush to thank Hashem. So everyone was like, wow, what are the odds that 2 days in a row, two people from the same kehillah get hit by a car and nothing happens to them? They asked him, what happened to you? What's your story? And he said, you know, I was walking outside and Baruch Hashem, I was not hit by a car. And I'm making a kiddush because I was not hit by a car. So these are ways that we can just simplify our life and focus on not all the bad, but like the good, the accessible, the bad that didn't happen. And I just wanted to end with one funny thing. I was looking through my articles, someone needed a sample, and I found something, a true story that happened to me on the week of Parshas Balak, when I was still living in Passaic. That's how I know the lovely Esther. It's just so funny. I wrote that I had decided to call the utility company because they sent me a shutoff notice and I knew I always paid my bills. So I was like, what is this? So I got their automated system. Really, I just want to know, like, was it a scare? Like, is it a mistake? Because I'm not the type to like wait till then. So even though the hours officially were had begun at 7:30, I couldn't get a live person no matter what I did. So a pre-recorded voice operator was offering me payment plans. You know, when you can't get a live person? So the automated thing was saying, would you like to pay $384 now and $26 monthly for the next few months? Say accept or decline. So I said decline. Would you like to pay $208 now and $37 monthly for the next few months? Say accept or decline. Decline. Would you like to pay $112 now and $69 monthly for the next few months? Say accept or decline. And I wanted to say decline again. Eventually, they would have to put a person on the line, right? If I say decline enough times. But I sneezed. And their phone system was obviously super sensitive because the next thing I heard was, okay, your payment plan is confirmed. I'm like, what? Sealed with a sneeze. And the craziest part is that it was Parshas Balak, where Bilam thinks he's going to curse the Yidden, and instead something else comes out of him. Brachos, sealed, done. So with that, I end, and I thank you, my dear and precious friends, for coming on, and I hope you enjoyed, and thank you so much for listening.